This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We're going to start with one of the most bizarre events in the rise of Donald Trump. The infamous Russian dossier. It's a collection of memos written by former British spy Christopher Steele, who was working on contract for an opposition research company. But this wasn't the typical opposition research that candidates do on each other to dig up dirt. The dossier alleges a ring of corrupt ties between Trump and powerful Russians, so significant that Christopher Steele brought this information to the FBI. After the dossier was published, Steele went into hiding, and he's been attacked relentlessly by conservative media and prominent Republicans as a tool of the Clinton campaign, a purveyor somehow of fake news about a fake scandal, possibly even a criminal. Jane Mayer, a staff writer at The New Yorker, has just published a profile of Christopher Steele, and she found that the dossier wasn't even the whole of what he found out about Donald Trump and Russia. Jane, let's start with one point in your article that has gotten a lot of attention, and that is the idea that there's another Christopher Steele memo written after the election in which it's alleged that the Kremlin somehow tried to intervene and block Trump's initial choice for Secretary of State, Mitt Romney. Take us through that memo and how this allegation is supposed to have played out.
Right. So there is, it was the missing memo from Steele, and it was written at the very end of November 2016. And it's just, it's unusual for his memos because it's really short and it's only based on one source. And his source is just someone who's describing what the talk is in the Russian foreign ministry. And what he says is that people there were claiming credit for trying to intervene and stop Trump from picking Mitt Romney as Secretary of State.
Well, how could they possibly have done that? In other words, there was a lot of opposition to Mitt Romney in the administration to the degree to which Kellyanne Conway went on television and spoke for the Republicans who were against somebody like Romney, who I guess they thought was too much of a globalist. So what did the Russians have to do with any of that?
Well, so it doesn't prove a thing. I mean, it's simply saying this is what they were talking about. And the reason it's interesting and, you know, maybe in some kind of far out way, possibly true, who knows, you know, you need a lot more information, but is that the sort of the situation surrounding it kind of fits the crazy conspiracy theory for a change. And if you take a look at what happened, what's interesting is that Romney did eventually get rejected, and the choice was Rex Tillerson instead, who was kind of a surprise, and as we write, a happy surprise in Moscow at that point, because he had very warm and longstanding ties to the Russian government. He'd been at ExxonMobil, where they had done a huge oil deal with Rosneft, the Russian oil company.
So I wanted to get that point on the boards, but I really want to start from the beginning. Let's begin with, who is Christopher Steele? What's his experience? And why is he looking into any potential Russia-Trump relations in the first place?
So Christopher Steele is someone who spent most of his career at MI6 as a Russia area expert for the British Intelligence Service. He was there for over 20 years. And after that, he left in 2009 and set up his own small business selling intelligence to private clients. And he's considered quite expert by most other people I interviewed in the area of post-Soviet Russia.
So who initially hired him to look into Donald Trump and Russia?
Fusion GPS, which is a Washington firm that provides intelligence also for pay to clients.
But in fact, Wasn't there a Republican, Paul Singer, a finance guy who was very much in the establishment of the Republican Party, also interested in relationships between Trump and Russia as a way to, you know, combat the Trump candidacy early on?
Right. I mean, and this is one of the things that suggests there was kind of a bipartisan beginning to this whole research project. Fusion GPS first worked for Paul Singer through a corporation he set up that's called the Free Beacon. And so the first funding came from the right. It came from a Republican who was unhappy with Trump. And when it looked like Trump was going to get the nomination, Paul Singer dropped out, gave up. And Fusion GPS, which had been doing the research, had come across a number of really hot leads, they thought. And so they then went across town, got in touch with the Clinton campaign and said, would you like us to keep digging? We think we're coming up with some interesting stuff.
Is there anything sleazy about that? Is that just the way Washington works these days?
You know, I mean, I think it's the way a lot of the world works. I mean, these companies are not, they're not political. They are commercial enterprises, and they're going to work for almost anyone who will pay them to do the research. And so, you know, they're not like journalists or political figures. They are just companies making a profit.
Do you have any sense of who his sources in Russia are? What kind of people? How high?
Well, he describes them in kind of general terms in most of these reports. And so they range from everything from top former Kremlin officials and former FSB agents to people who worked in, for instance, the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Moscow. It seems to be a whole range of people.
And why do we trust him? Why, you know, your piece, if there's an overwhelming tone to it, it's one of that this guy has great credibility in intelligence circles, but also in government circles. Why do you trust him?
Well, I certainly wouldn't do it on blind faith. I mean, what this piece does is goes back and interviews people who've worked with him and known him really throughout his whole life and who know his whole record professionally. And it also talks to intelligence officials about the dossier and how it stands up over time. And what comes through in the reporting is he has an excellent reputation. He's considered a reliable source by the U.S. government, by both the intelligence agencies and the FBI, who've worked closely with him over the years. He's considered reliable by MI6, where he worked for over 20 years, and he's considered to be reliable by the clients who've hired him as his private business. And so he brings with him a sort of a sterling reputation, basically. And, you know, the dossier, I think you also have to understand what it is. And a lot of the intelligence people that I interviewed talked about it. If you're expecting it to be 100% accurate, I think you're going to be disappointed. What it is basically raw intelligence. It's conversations with well-informed sources who are saying what they're hearing. It hasn't been corroborated or cross-checked with other kinds of intelligence, which is what a finished intelligence report would be. It's just the first stage of an intelligence report.
Now, it's pointed out in the piece that Steele is in the position of being hated by both the president of Russia and the president of the United States, Putin and Trump. So give us a sense of what the last year has been like for Steele. And how do you know, by the way?
Well, it's been incredibly hard for him, is the answer. He has talked to friends. My life is never going to be the same, is what he tells people. And how do I know it? Well, one of the greatest sources in the story is his business partner, Christopher Burroughs, with whom he set up the business in 2009. It's a small shop, fewer than 10 employees. They work closely together every day. And Burroughs, for the first time, has really revealed what it's been like for them and told me what Steele's been saying. And so did many of Steele's old friends, because I got sort of the ability to talk to an awful lot of people who've known him over the years.
One of the things that Steele investigated in his career recently is the way that Litvinenko was poisoned to death by Soviet agents. At least that was the conclusion he came to, Alexander Litvinenko. In fact, there's no news of yet another Russian agent living in London who seems to be dying of poisoning, possibly by Russian infiltration. That suggests that Christopher Steele himself might be in great danger. Does Steele think that he is in mortal danger?
You know, he doesn't, from what I've heard, act like somebody who thinks he's in mortal danger. He did initially, when the news broke of who he is and that he was the author of this dossier, he fled with his family for about 8 weeks and went into hiding. But he's now back and walking the streets of London. He tries to keep a very low profile and just do his work.
Is he protected by British authorities?
He is not, no. And I think the theory that he has shared with his partner is that the Russians generally, you know, they may go after their own in places as far-flung as London, but they don't generally go after the opposing country's intelligence services.
Now, this piece is hardly a puff piece on Christopher Steele. You have people who are his critics, not only in the present tense, but when he was in college, and also people describe him as having a Marmite personality. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, he has a Marmite is this very sort of salty spread that the British put on toast sometimes. Either you love it or you hate it. And he has had that effect on people throughout his life. He's a very black and white person, has a very binary view of what's right and what's wrong, and a very strong sense of this is my duty and I must do it. And, you know, some people find it, to some extent, kind of naive. You know, at one point, one of the people he talked to said that he would sort of describe the goodies versus the baddies. And the baddies were the Russians and the goodies were the West, with the, you know, which included, in his view, the United States. And so I think when I say he's naive, what I mean is he sort of had a view of the U.S. government as being somewhat enlightened and not necessarily throwing somebody like Christopher Steele under the bus in order to sort of push their partisan political agenda.
So there's an amazing moment in your piece, Jane, when Glenn Simpson, who's one of the co-founders of Fusion GPS, the firm that Steele was working for and doing the investigation for, and Simpson said in congressional testimony that, quote, we threw a line in the water and Moby Dick came back. Did Steele know what he was getting himself into when he decided to look into Trump's connection to Russia? And when they did bring Moby Dick back, what did he do next?
Well, and this is, you know, to me, one of the major moments in the story, too. What's so interesting is that he didn't even think really about what he was getting himself into in the beginning. So he goes ahead, he gets this information, he thinks it's going to be an assignment to look into just, you know, a few sort of ordinary dodgy business deals involving Trump and Russia. And his network is tasked to bring back what they can find. And lo and behold, what comes back is utterly shocking.
So what is shocking? We know the one indelible piece of business in the dossier, which was eventually published by BuzzFeed, was that Trump at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in his room at the presidential suite allegedly had paid prostitutes to urinate on the bed. But the dossier and the many memos that comprise it have many other details. What are the most salient ones? What are the most believable and what are the most problematic for the Trump administration?
Well, so I have to say, to Steele, what he's looking at is not just the act itself, but the possibility that a future president of the United States could be blackmailed, and that that could possibly explain a lot of the pro-Russian positions that Trump is taking. What he's also looking at is that the first report comes, it's written up in the end of June in 2016 by him, and it also looks at what he says is his sources say is at least a 5-year courtship by the Russians of Trump, and that they have a sort of this relationship going back over years where the Russians are feeding Trump and the people around him intelligence that on his opponents, including Hillary Clinton, and offering dirt on her in particular, and that they're backing Trump in the election in particular, and that they're going to try to do this in exchange for eventually trying to get some policy changes that they want from the United States, including lifting sanctions.
So just to be clear, the funding for Steele's work, which is controversial, that all came from private sources, right? But he then brought the results of his investigation to the FBI out of a sense of national security. Am I getting it right?
That's right. So this has been something that's been misportrayed by Trump's defenders, basically. They've suggested he went to the FBI in order to start up the current so-called witch hunt, as they see it. They claim that what Steele was trying to do was take opposition research that was phony to begin with and start an FBI investigation into Trump in order to blacken his name. What was the reality? Well, the reality is that he did this voluntarily. He did it for free, and he did it out of a sense of duty that he'd acted on in many times in the past.
So he gives this dossier to the FBI in 2016 in July. How did the FBI react? Was the FBI already looking into Trump themselves?
So he doesn't actually give them the dossier. He just does a briefing on July 5th, 2016. One of the FBI agents he knows comes by his office in London. And apparently the reaction, Steele has said elsewhere, was shock and horror. But it seemed like as the weeks went on, the FBI really didn't do much about it. I was told it was summertime. People are on vacation. Meanwhile,
wait a minute. Are you kidding me? The FBI didn't brief anybody because people were in Cape Cod or the Jersey Shore?
It just kind of moseyed along.
So the FBI initially doesn't react in the summer of 2016. Weeks go by. And at this point, Steele and his colleagues at Fusion GPS decide that they're going to try to get some of this information out through other means. And you, among others, were involved. Tell us that story.
I got this kind of mysterious call saying, would you like to meet with a Russian expert? We can't give you his name, but he's going to be over at the Tabard Inn near DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C., and meet us at a certain point. So I thought, well, that's intriguing. So, of course, I went over.
And it's close to the office, so it's not
inconvenient. It's close to the office, and the food's really good there. And so I walk in, and right around a table in a private dining room are people from Fusion GPS and this British man who turns out to be Christopher Steele. And we were told we were not allowed to use his name, we reporters.
How many reporters were there?
Well, it was just me at that point, mm-hmm. But there were others coming and going all day long, I think. And I was given a briefing by him. And he made a kind of a very strong impression on me because he was tamped down as a person, but he was trying very hard to get across something that you could see he actually really believed strongly in, which was, in essence, that the U.S. was in danger. And he was saying Trump has compromising ties with the Russians, and they are trying to interfere in your election, and they're trying to undo NATO, and they're trying to break up the Western alliance, and this is really serious. Later, when after Trump was elected and more came out about the ties between the Trump team and Russia, and eventually much more came out about the dossier, and he was described as a bad actor by the Trump defenders and someone who was a liar and somebody who was just out to get Trump, it didn't compute with the little glimpse I'd seen of him.
To what degree does this dossier shape the Mueller investigation of the Trump administration?
I don't know. You know, Mueller is a black box. They famously don't leak. It's really hard to know. But what you can see is that there are four members of the Trump team who Mueller has now indicted, and three of them have pled guilty and are cooperating with him. And these are people, several of whom are named in the Steele dossier. So it seems as if there's something beyond just smoke. There's a little bit of fire there, we've seen.
The article, and it's a remarkable one, even though I know I'm prejudiced, is called The Man Behind the Dossier, and the reporter and author is Jane Mayer. Jane, thanks so much.
Thanks, David.
Jane Mayer, a staff writer since 1995 and the author of Dark Money and other books. You can find Jane's article about Christopher Steele at newyorker.com.